There are a few direct... There are few new directors working today with as much name recognition as Jordan Peele, from his humble beginnings as a cast member on Mad TV to hosting his own sketch comedy series Key and Peele with Keegan-Michael Key, and eventually taking his place among filmmaking greats with the release of his 2017 hit Get Out. Of course, even with an Oscar win under his belt, Peele wasn't one to rest on his laurels and would soon return with 2019's Us. And now, in 2022, he's back once again to bring us another tense and darkly comedic story with Nope.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another wonderful edition of Scriptor Screen, your number one source for dealing with emotional and systemic trauma, honestly.
It's the truth.
I am one of your wonderful co-hosts, Christopher Bartholomew Kitchen, alongside my other co-host, Zachary Xenoblade Strackman.
That's me?
Zach, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good, you know. I'm doing good. I recently picked up one of those cool devices that charges your phone, your AirPods, and your watch all at the same time.
Like a singular device that does all that?
Yeah, it's like it's a special dock. If I could show it to you, I would, but it's kind of plugged in over there and it's a little far away.
You know what I actually have? I have the device that just holds the phone and the watch. And okay. It's supposed to organize the cables through it, but it doesn't charge it. You have to put your cables through it. So it's a little less, meaningful.
That just sounds like it's adding extra steps.
It wasn't my idea to get it, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as it wasn't your idea. As long as we're just ducking all culpability, then, you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. What are we here for?
We are here to discuss another wonderful piece of entertainment media and the like. As always, here on Scriptor Screen, we talk about movies, talk about TV shows, entertainment news, all of the above. You can listen to us and find us on our website, www.scriptorscreen.com, or at anchor.fm, anchor.fm/scriptorscreen. I was about to mess that one up.
That's good.
And on social media, at Scriptor Screen, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Zach, we are here.
We're here.
Talk about
now. We're over there.
Oh. First and foremost, however, we have some housekeeping, as always.
Housekeeping.
This is episode 60.
Dear God.
9 more to go.
Why did you people let this go on for this long?
I think by you people, you're referring to you and I. And yes. I have to ask why you speak about yourself in this. It's not the third person, but I guess the second person?
Because I have transcended my mortal shell. I have forsaken my humanity and sacrificed to the God Hand.
Oh, God. I'm not excited for that. but on to the news, Zach, because there is news.
There's news.
Yes. Right when we finished recording our last episode for our last Marvel double feature, if you will, we got the big news.
Yeah,
we got the big kahuna.
That was one of those, like, you spoke, like maybe 12 hours too soon.
Yeah, and they laid down the trajectory for the next three phases.
Well, as it turns out, I think we're just about done with one of those phases.
Yeah, phase four is like coming to an end.
Two more titles in phase four.
We got, some sick trailers. Gotta say, Wakanda Forever gave me chills and just I think I'd come off of that last podcast thing, like, I have really nothing to look forward to in the future of the MCU. Like, it's all, like, whatever. Like, yeah, I guess we're gonna get some cool shit someday. And then I ate my fucking words again, because that trailer, I'm like, oh my God, this is literally incredible.
It was,
I'm re-excited.
It was emotional, you know? Listen.
It was.
The visuals... seeing, you know, the people of Wakanda, seeing Namor the Submariner and everything with like with their society underwater riding whales, and he's got the wings on his feet. Hearing Angela Bassett just deliver some powerful dialogue.
Yeah. It was really exciting.
I don't believe there will be a dry eye in the house when this movie comes out.
Oh. That's like, I'm not ready for it. Like, I'm ready for it because I'm excited. Not ready for it because I don't know that I think that I realize what I'm asking for.
Listen, I think...
Am I ready to be hurt again? Maybe. Who's to say?
I think Ryan Coogler is going to do a fantastic job with this film. But that's not all, because there's a lot of exciting stuff. Apparently, still for this year, we got She-Hulk, which mm-hmm. I saw a clip for today, and they've done a whole lot to improve the CG, the motion capture for the She-Hulk character.
They did.
We've got, I think the Thunderbolts is supposed to come out in a couple of years, they announced. Phase 5 is going to be interesting because a lot of it is like weird because we're getting an Agatha Harkness show where it's like, who the hell wants this?
Right.
But we're also getting Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and Blade.
Loki Season 2.
And my personal most exciting, what I found the most exciting announcement out of everything, an 18-episode season of Daredevil Born Again.
Yeah, dude. That one is, like, kind of crazy. Not that we didn't get enough Daredevil, but, like, holy shit.
18 episodes.
That's a lot more that
that's
we
like,
bargained
that's
for.
That's, like, 3 seasons of Loki.
Yeah, and then not to mention, you know, we got some teases of Daredevil's inclusion in the Echo series. Echo, the character that was introduced in Hawkeye.
And in She-Hulk.
And we get, like, a little tease of She-Hulk. A little questionable tease, if you ask me. I don't know that we got to see some of the best
footage
they have
CGI,
to offer.
Maybe it's CGI.
Maybe he's actually triple flipping in the air. You know,
I don't know, but it looks like he's almost got that, like, the yellow and red and black outfit.
I'm all for that. That is, you know, like, I like the fact that they're going to go through the different suits. Like, sweet. Through the Affleck suit again. That'd
I really hope they bring back, if we're starting with a new series, I hope that it's not just, okay, here's Charlie Cox, here's Vincent D'Onofrio, but it's a fresh start. I want to see, like, the carryover from the last season on Netflix, which, like, I want to see Poindexter now full on as Bullseye. I want to see cool shit.
Oh, you know what's funny? Spoiler alert, I never finished season 3 of Daredevil.
Oh, oops. Well, you miss out on maybe the best fight in the whole series.
I was gonna say, I'm pretty sure it came out when I was, like, graduating college.
Nice.
So, like, I was like, Daredevil was, like, the last thing I was thinking of.
You know what? I like that you think that's a good excuse. But listen, it's okay because we have this show. That means we can watch all of Daredevil and do episodes on it in the lead up to Daredevil Born Again.
Basically. And I think that's, like, in hindsight, that's the best thing about having a podcast.
Absolutely.
There is another piece of news that I wanted to discuss.
Is it Marvel MCU adjacent, or...?
It's not. It's in the realm of film, so to speak.
Okay.
And I found this funny. It's a headline that says, Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio are reuniting for a 7th time. And I'm just thinking to myself, we still have yet to have received the 6th collaboration with Killers of the Flower Moon, and we're already talking about, like, a 7th reunion.
And what, this new movie, it's going to be on, like, on Apple Plus?
Apple TV Plus. It's called The Wager, a naval survival drama.
Ooh, I do love survival dramas, gotta say.
And the last one that he did, Leonardo DiCaprio with Alejandro Iñárritu, won him an Academy Award. So
Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Who's to say this one does not also bode for great success?
I think it will, probably. I might have to get Apple TV Plus. Gotta do something about that
name. Don't you get a new one with your iPhone? Like, you get a free subscription with your iPhone.
Probably.
Like for a year or something. I did.
Probably.
Yeah.
But let us shift from Apple to the Peel. Like that transition? Hey, here we go.
Look at that.
Jordan Peel, known funny man, television host, really good filmmaker.
Yes.
He's back. He's in the news because he came out with a good film. And we're here to talk about it. This film is called Nope. So anyone who doesn't know Jordan Peele, one, I don't believe you. And two, Jordan Peele, he did Get Out. He did Us. Really made a name for himself as kind of like, you know, tackling the horror genre and making some really interesting new takes on horror, but also injecting a lot of social commentary, a lot of commentary on class, on race, on society, because, you know, we do live in one. And and he's back to do it all over again.
I don't know about you. I missed out on Us. I personally did not see it, unfortunately. Ah, I did see Get Out.
Add it to the list.
I saw Get Out. And I thought, you know, usually I don't, horror is not my genre. Scary things, not my genre. I'm not into it.
But we here at Script to Screen are giant babies.
No, I'm a giant baby. You watch all the horror you like, and that's fine.
I don't go out of my way for it. I still haven't seen Black Phone.
Yeah, people have been talking to me about this movie, Black Phone. And I'm like, is it really that good of a watch? Like, it's the one with Ethan Hawke, right?
Yes.
I don't know. Let me. I don't want to spend this time looking at Black Phone and talking about Ethan Hawke. But I will say I did want to see Nope, just because I don't know that I knew really what this film was about versus Us. I think I kind of got more of like a sinister idea from the trailer, and I'm like, I'm good. Like, Get Out was interesting, you know, like...
Get Out had a lot of intrigue going into it, and I think the best way to enjoy Nope, Nope, is the same way of just know as little as possible going in.
Yeah.
And just kind of letting the movie bring you along for the ride.
Yeah.
But how should we do this? I guess let's give kind of like a synopsis. We'll talk about who's involved, and we'll talk some non-spoilers and then go full spoilers. How does that sound to you on this day?
I am ready, and I have the synopses.
Give
two
it to
siblings who run a California horse ranch discover something wonderful and sinister in the skies above, and the owner of an adjacent theme park tries to profit from the mysterious otherworldly phenomenon.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that's good. It's good. It tells you just enough without. I would say a lot of trailers, a lot of the stuff for this film, even though they still kept it pretty close to the chest with a lot of their marketing, they revealed what it was kind of like pretty early on into the marketing, and I was like, the best part about the marketing was that I didn't know. So I would have preferred if I didn't know anything going in.
Yeah.
But that being said, that's a good synopsis. Let's talk about the cast and crew. This film was written and directed and produced by Jordan Peele, with Ian Cooper also producing. Cinematography by the one, the only Hoyt Van Hoytema.
Noise.
Music by Michael Abels. Edited by Nicholas Mansour. Distributed by Universal Studios, which apparently there is now a Nope exhibit on the Universal lot tour.
The one in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Oh.
So that's like, you know, that's a big thing. It's like Jordan Peele has kind of put his stamp on Hollywood history.
Yeah.
Film was released on July 22nd, 2022. Runtime of 131 minutes. Budget of $68 million, which is his most expensive film to date. And So far, a box office return of $83.1 million, which is small, especially compared to his other films. But keep in mind, movie has not been out for too long.
I was going to say, well, we can kind of see it was released, I mean, July 22nd, so we're on like the second week.
So it will, you know, it remains to be seen how this movie will perform. Obviously, his last two films were both big successes. I can't imagine this one won't be. Although I definitely will say that upon leaving the theater, just hearing people talk, not that I was listening or eavesdropping, but just hearing people talking to each other as they were leaving the theater, I could tell there was a certain percentage of the audience I was with that just didn't get the movie, but we'll talk about that later.
I will say this. I was maybe one of three people in my movie theater.
Wow, really?
And I was kind of sad about it. I was like,
how about that?
But, that's... you know, I chose like a daytime during the weekday showtime. And so, like, you know, but it's summer, right? There should be like... these things should be packed. I don't know. At the same time, like I honestly have no idea. I went during that time because it like was perfect for my schedule.
And hey, I'm like, yes, this is whatever like, works great. Works.
Exactly.
Let's talk about this cast. Daniel Kaluuya as Otis O.J. Haywood Jr.
I'm sorry. Did you see this? Somebody, no. I think it was an interview with Jordan Peele recently that. Jordan Peele himself said that Daniel Kaluuya was...
is his Robert De Niro?
Oh, I read it was like his Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, well,
I mean, maybe it is Robert thing. De Niro. Yeah, wait. What did he say? Was it Robert De Niro? Maybe I'm misquoting. Maybe I'm almost remembering this. Are you Googling it too? Because I'm Googling it.
Oh, no, I'm leaving it to you, because I know I'm right.
Oh, okay, then what are you, like, leaving this whole blank silence for? It's Robert De Niro, okay?
Yes.
Get the hell out of here.
Kiki Palmer as Emerald M. Haywood. Steven Yeun, as Ricky Jupe Park. Brandon Perea as Angel Torres. Michael Wincott as Antlers Holst. Keith David as Otis Haywood Sr. and Terry Notary of Planet of the Apes fame as Gordy.
Dude.
And we'll get into that. So, here's our non-spoiler talk for this film. Chris, what did you in... Let's say 15 or less sentences think about Nope.
I thought it was good, right? How many words is that?
It was good.
Right.
Like, yeah.
How many words is that? All right. All in all, I was entertained. I was intrigued as somebody who... you know, this film, I think, takes an interesting position on, like, a couple different aspects. I think it takes, it has, like, commentary on, like, the film industry, has commentary on, like, film history and the role of race in film, and, like, in the inception of the idea of film. I think there's also a play on... like, what would you call it? Like, kind of documentary as well, and nature watching.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting about all that is that I did not really think those were the meaning of the film until I left the theater and I realized, I guess that's all there was. And that kind of made me a little, I don't know, underwhelmed, I will say. Okay. Not that it was a bad film.
Would you say that the movie was overhyped for you?
No. I wouldn't say it was overhyped, because I don't know how hyped I was besides, like, oh, this is interesting. Because I don't feel like I got a lot from the marketing. Like, okay. When you saw the first trailer, it said, nope. And that was the title? And then, like, we saw the trailers, and I'm like, I was still so curious as to what this film could possibly be about. I think you and I talked about, like, maybe there's, like, a kind of, like, a Don't Look Up type of thing, because all these people are, like, looking up, and, you know, and so I was expecting a really big, like, social, you know, thematic interplay. And I mean, maybe it was there, present in some way, shape, or form, but I don't think it was dealing with something that was as, like, life-changing. Not life-changing, but, like, I don't know, with as much gravity as, like, other social issues.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
and,
no.
And because of that, I'm like, I was looking for it the entire time, and maybe it was because of that that I felt like, oh, that's probably why I came out. But now, there were other aspects of this film that I really liked. I think they captured certain areas very well. Like almost like to the T that I'm like, that is 100% fucking accurate how some of these things are going down. I thought the music was amazing. Yes. I thought the fucking horror scenes were disgusting. They were gross. And I was indeed horrified. But it's only because I am a baby, as mentioned earlier in the podcast. Like, I mean, Billy can attest. I am a baby.
Tell him it's true.
Thank you for attesting, Billy. that is, yeah, that's my non-spoilery-ish thought.
Let me tell you this.
Tell me.
When I saw it, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really creative. I really liked the angle they were going for and how they went about telling the story they wanted to tell. I would say it was a strong contender for my favorite film of the year.
Before you saw it?
No. When I saw it. Until, like, and this is no knock on Jordan Peele. Nope. Because it's still an excellent film, in my opinion. And really just a great time. But I actually just saw Everything Everywhere All at Once. And holy God, that movie was so good. it is like, it lived up to every bit of hype that has been given toward it. And I can't wait to see it again. And I can't wait to see Nope again, because both of those films were great. But I'd say if I had to pick one where, like, I enjoyed more, that's hard to say because I enjoyed them both. But I definitely had a big, dumb grin on my face the whole time through Everything Everywhere All at Once. And Nope, I think, was a more... I don't want to say... It wasn't worse. It was just different. But I enjoyed Nope. So, you know, saying it's my second favorite film of the year so far, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But overall, I'd say I think our non-spoilery thoughts are pretty well said, and I think we can move pretty comfortably into spoiler talks.
Dude, I should have leaked this movie.
I
should have, like, 2 seconds late, and they were already... he's talking to his dad.
Question.
Yeah.
Did you stop at the concession stand?
I did.
Oh, so this is just all your fault.
This is a me problem. But there was no one in... I was expecting, like, 20 minutes trailers. Not the case. They did not abide by that rule.
I only had one trailer... I only had one trailer in the whole movie, and it was Oppenheimer.
Ah, see, I missed that. I had to watch that on my cell phone, like a jag-off.
Oh, man.
Now, Nope, as a film, I mean, it was good. I liked it. Like, the best part, the most consistent part about the entire film, by and large, was the music. The music was so good in this, dude. It felt like everything that a motion picture, like, a score should be. Like, it, I don't know. I just felt like at every turn of the film, I felt like I was listening to, like, something old school Hollywood, which was, like, super on theme, right? Because it takes, like, they are Hollywood ranchers, and they're animal wranglers, basically.
Yeah.
And they, I like how they explored that in the series. Everybody was talking to me about this. I'm like, oh, you should go watch it because it explores like the film industry and stuff, and you work there. And I'm like, okay, let's see what they're all fucking. Even you told me that.
I did, and upon reflection, I think it is on a surface level.
Yeah.
Super. But it's not like you know, they don't exactly pay lip service to like the gaffers and the
No. They don't need to, because you know what? They fucking made fun of the director of photography. And that brought so much joy to my heart.
Hey,
because
Antlers Holst was great.
Antlers Holst is not every DP I've ever met, but like he's a good amount of DPs that I've met that it's like, there's one specific DP I'm thinking of when I think of Antlers Holst. And I'm like, dude, Michael Wincott, that guy, nail on the head right there.
It was a pretty delightful.
But you character. Know who's also like really like a great character, like, and she played the role perfectly, was Kiki Palmer.
Dude, she was the life of this movie.
Kiki Palmer did amazing, and it's because that I know this person. I've met this person.
Absolutely.
Who has her pockets and all these things that she's trying to do. She's trying to make money. She's trying to like get by, especially like in show business, like, so to speak. And you have O.J. Haywood, who cares more about like the legacy than he does like the work, like being right. out there on set. And obviously he's not like I like that duality, like if him kind of not like being successful like on his own, but like he's kind of a loner, like, and he likes it that way. He likes his life away from like the studios and the people there and all the obnoxiousness, because like, I let me tell you what. Those people that are like always like asking about like questions about the animal and like, and you know, he's uncomfortable telling them not to look at his, like, don't stand behind it, like, don't look at the eyes. Like, there are dumbasses on mm-hmm. set all the time, whether they're 80s or directors or fucking just like makeup people or whatever. And I mean, I'm putting all these names, not all those people are dumbasses. Like, there's people on set that, like,
you're about to make some real enemies at work.
I'm not trying to, because you know what? I love every AD and makeup artist and like other people like I've been on set with, and like, you know, I am in like,
but my you own know who you are.
But it's just like, I've seen people like act ridiculous, and I'll be honest, it's never those people I just named. It's always 100% certain producers, certain. I'm going to call them client agency people, that are asking the worst things ever, and all of us tradespeople are looking at them like the 80s, like the makeup artists, like all these other people, and like, what the fuck are you asking? And because we have to translate the requests and look at the animal ring and are like, can we do this? And ask them with a smile on their face, they're like, obviously not, we can't, you cannot do this. What are you even asking for? Like, yeah, it just had to be recorded that we asked.
And you really get that vibe, I think, a lot in that first scene when OJ is with the horse at the what are they shooting, a commercial, and just the whole thing's such a shit show. And Otis, you can tell he just doesn't have the temperament for that kind of work. Obviously, M has to step in. She has to be the one to kind of pump everyone up and get them to listen to
safety meetings. Have you ever attended a safety meeting? They're the best.
Not in film production, but in theater.
Hate it. Safety meetings. I mean, I don't hate them. They're important, right? It's the biggest fucking waste of time in the world.
Nonsense. No, because things need to be safe. But I just, that whole scene, again, Kiki Palmer does a fantastic job just bringing a lot of energy to the scene. She's a great foil.
It's a really good character introduction, too.
Yeah, and she's a great foil to Otis, to OJ, because he's the polar opposite of her in a lot of ways, but also with good reason, because he also watched his father violently die.
Yeah.
Keith and David.
Was, also, he kept like the nickel that did it in that plastic bag. Did you see that?
Yeah,
he kept it.
Listen,
why,
man.
Why would he do that?
Well, because I think it ties into a few of the themes in this movie of people kind of Exploiting past traumas. We'll get into that in a minute. Well, let's get into it now, because we're going to talk about another, kind of like the third most important character in this film, Steven Yeun as Ricky Park, or Jupe. He is a friend of Otis, of OJ.
Quote-unquote.
Well, he's a business partner. OJ, what is it? Does OJ sell him horses or buy horses from him?
I think so. OJ raises and sells the horses to him, and then, or really, it was his dad that did it. And so he, and, because he's taken over the business now, OJ has right. to deal with Jupe.
Okay, and Jupe is a former child star who was in some movies, and then was in a TV show that went horrifically wrong.
Yeah, not a fan of that.
Terry Notary plays Gordy, a chimpanzee who, let's just say, does not take kindly to a lot of people being around him when balloons pop, and does what a lot of captive wild animals do, which is lash out, and kind of cuts to some of the core themes of this film of the exploitation of animals and the exploitation of actors and people who profit off their past traumas and all of that, and the spectacle we make of capturing and showing these live animals to an audience. It's like they've never seen King Kong before.
Yeah. Which is funny for a film about film.
Yeah, really. But that scene when Jupe opens up his kind of like secret room where they've got all the stuff from the Gordy show.
Hate that.
And they have the shoe with the that had landed like in just the like one position that was there. He had the costume that the chimpanzee wore. And a fun note is on the wall, they have a Mad TV or a Mad magazine, I should say. Cover, which is like lampooning the incident, and I thought that was good because Jordan Peele got his start on TV with Mad TV.
Yeah, that was definitely probably more the creepier side of like the show, especially like when we started going into like the history. How did you feel about that? By the way, they organized this film in almost chapters of sorts.
Yeah,
but like I was trying to correlate and like follow the chapters as they would be announced, but I felt like some of the material that we would go into them with didn't always correlate to the title. That I'm like,
right.
Is this chapter really that, or are we just like how? Like I felt like some of the structure of the narrative was a little harder to follow because of that. But you know, I don't want to go off too much on a tangent just because you know, Jupe. I don't know how he I don't know how he recovered from such an incident to the point where he thought, "Oh, let me have a shrine of this. This is also be a great idea to have."
I think it's, you know, there is something to say, and you can see in the film he has moments where he's definitely reflecting on the horror scene of a chimpanzee murdering a bunch of people on a set. Can chimps commit murder? Killing. He killed them. And you can see it does weigh on him, but I think there's it's a psychological thing of like, if I can profit off this, if I can find a way to take control of my past trauma, it won't haunt me anymore. So he's enshrined this whole incident, the Gordy incident, in this little museum that he keeps locked off, and he charges like European people lots of money to sleep, to spend the night inside. And I think it's a way of maintaining control. And that's a big theme of this film, is exploitation, control, people trying to grasp at things that maybe people are not meant to grasp at.
Yeah.
And I think that the whole Gordy situation is kind of a microcosm of everything that happens in this film.
Yeah, it's just, but you know, it's funny because they get a, I don't want to say a much happier ending with the end of Gordy, but it's,
I would think so.
I would just call it like a much more definitive end, so to speak.
Oh my god, one of the, like, you know, I mentioned you hearing people when I was leaving the theater, and there's a woman right in front of me, and she was just like complaining about the movie as everyone was filing out of the theater, and I just heard her go, "And what the hell was all that stuff about the monkey?" And I was just like, "Did you not get the connection?"
Yeah, you know what I liked at I would say closer toward the end of the film, I started putting pieces together that, like, there were a lot of cutaways to, like, footage of animals, right?
Yes.
And, like, documentary style, just, like, watching animals and nature, which is basically, like, the premise of, like, their goal with the creature, right?
With Jean Jacket.
Or Jean Jacket, as we're calling it. That they wanted to capture it on footage in order to make money or whatever the fuck. I thought that was dumb.
I loved it, because we'll get into that. Say what you're going to say, and then I want to get into that whole bag of worms.
It's funny because, like, I almost feel like we had three different aspects of, like, documentary styles, like, cinematography. We had, like, they had the cutaways of, like, traditional, like, documentary style footage.
Right.
Where, like, there's no human interaction. It's just, like, camera observing animals, right? And then you have, like, another take where it's like, okay, well, let's have the animals interact with people, and mm-hmm. let's capture that on camera and see how that happens. And so, like, so that's another layer, and then which will help us kind of transition into this final layer of, okay, this animal does not want to interact with people. How are people going to make this animal interact with them and get it captured on footage?
I like the way you put that. That's very much the case with this film, and I've seen a lot of people compare it, and I think rightly so, to Jaws.
Yeah, you were the one that pointed that out to me.
Not my hot take, but I thought it was very fitting because I was like, yes, there's so much similar to Jaws in this story, from, like, you know, a group of people trying to profit off of getting rid of a dangerous creature. Realizing,
I feel like with Jaws, though, it's a little more, like,
yes,
it's more, a little more clear cut that, like, all right, their intention is to kill this animal, and that's it, and then bring back proof that they killed the animal.
Right. This is more of, well, they do. So, okay, let's get into the other aspect of it, that our heroes, quote unquote, of this movie are not heroic. They're not doing this for altruistic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing this to strike it rich, and they, you know, their whole thing is it has to be something good enough to show on, like, Oprah, and then if they can get something convincing on film, then they will become rich beyond the wildest dreams. And it seems weird, and it kind of casts them in not the noblest light.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it because their entire business model, the entire thing that they market themselves as, the Haywood Hollywood Horses, I think is the name of their business, is that, going back to the first motion picture ever, The Horse in Motion by Edward Muybridge, where he filmed the black man on a horse, and no one knows who that black man was, but everyone knows who made the film. I think it's a chance of recapturing that, of saying, you know, we are putting our stamp on film, on discovery, on the world of motion picture by capturing something that no one has ever seen. That's what they use to kind of hook in Antlers, is we want you to film the thing that is unfilmable.
Yeah.
And everything ties into exploitation. They're exploiting this UFO for their own personal gain, just like how Jupe is also trying to exploit this UFO for his own personal gain, just like Jupe was part of a studio's exploitation of a chimpanzee for their gain.
So it's just a vicious cycle of exploitation it comes down to.
Yeah, and even, like, when you have, like, when they have set up their plan, and I love their plan, if there's anything I love to see in a movie, it's like when like you have a bunch of people and they start dishing out what their plan is. You're going to be here up on this rise and you're going to be doing this and I'm going to be over here and you're going to give me the signals and stuff. I love seeing that stuff. And also props to Antlers Holst bringing an IMAX hand crank camera to capture this thing because you can't get near it with electronics. Genius. I love it. But even like the exploitation of the paparazzi guy,
the TMZ or whoever.
Yeah.
Love his like character design of like this helmet and like this bike and just like this look that
he's faceless and his helmet is reflective. It reflects your face back at you. Like you're him, like you're just as bad as they are. Not you, but the characters of this film. I just love
the science behind it when they're like, oh, what do you think's going to happen when he's going like 65 miles an hour? Like into like there was like a lot of clever bits in the film. And all the while, like I said, the best part of the film has been happening throughout the entirety of it, which is like this amazing score. Mm-hmm. That it's the one thing keeping me like drawn in the film because like it's weaving in and out. And it's just like, I don't know, just I'm not a music person. I cannot articulate the why it's so good.
I disagree, Chris, because I was just over at your place this past weekend, and you played some lovely tunes on the piano.
Yeah, but it's to no credit of mine. I credit my ears to help me guide me in the process. Like I don't know the words to describe it without being disrespectful. You understand what I'm saying? But anyways, Antlers Holst, this character is fantastic.
He's so great.
He even exploits his own life.
Yes.
In pursuit of
to
this.
To get that perfect shot to film the unfilmable. Absolutely. He died in the line of duty, and I salute you, sir.
Do we want to talk about some more the more horror-y aspects of this, of the UFO, if you will, of this
whole... I love it. So,
like,
not a typical UFO.
No. And at first, this film, like, kind of gives us, like, a tease as to what this unknown flying object could be, unidentified, if you will, with, excuse me.
Oh, no, he's dying.
I'm not dying. I'm fine.
Co-host needed.
Well, I... Billy, take over. Oh, God. I don't even think he's seen the film. Maybe he has. I don't know. Anyways, where am I going? All right, so let's go back to the scene where OJ... First of all, his name's OJ. We didn't even talk about it. And they make note of that in that one of the first scenes in the film. And I love it.
Yeah, yeah. All the nervous white people who are like, oh no, a black man named OJ.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's Jordan Peele right there having fun.
That is, yeah, absolutely.
But we come to the scene where OJ's in the barn putting away, I think it's Lucky, right? The horse. Mm-hmm. And then we get like the little creatures.
Oh, fuck that scene.
Dude, I am like shitting my pants in the theater, like, fuck, what the fuck is that? I don't like it. And then like more of them come out. And then I'm like, oh, get fucked. Like, why? Why am I here? Like,
this is like, we're doing this. It's happening.
And then it's a fucking joke by the end of it.
So, like, my only issue with that is, like, on a rewatch, it makes sense because Emerald, she stole the horse from Jupe's little carnival place. And then the kids chose to freak them out as kind of like revenge for her stealing the horse. Mm-hmm. And then you see them in the costumes later and they're all part of Jupe's show. Mm-hmm. That they dress up like aliens. So all that's there. But then like for me, I'm just like, the only reason this scene is tense is because you don't know that they have these costumes.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that, but it was still what as the scene is unfolding the first time you see it, you're just kind of like, how is this happening right now?
Yeah, it's a play on the title, right? And they did it a couple times. Nope.
Like, and every single time, it's exactly the right sentiment to be expressing.
Yeah. And I kind of think, like, that's the relevance of, like, scenes like that and those moments that we get. And again, when the now we start going to the other horror elements that we get, some of the raining blood and all the artifacts that were swallowed and
the screaming that you hear and is pretty rough. I would say the scene that really gave me the willies, the one that I was just like, this, I am just uncomfortable, is after
these people get swallowed by this thing.
Yes. So we see Jupe, he's got a show, he just kind of pisses the creature off, which was an interesting thing to find out that he was aware of this UFO the whole time and was actually trying to manipulate the situation, exploit the situation to his own personal gain, and everyone gets swallowed up in this horrifying moment.
It was kind of like, it's kind of like poetry, right? Like, it rhymes. That it was all, it just, who, if you were in a position where you saw an animal get exploited to begin with and you thought, oh, I have a business model where I could take advantage of the same thing and it'll work out better this time, especially with something that I still have absolutely zero control over, you think there'd be like a thought between that fucking brain, you know, in there somewhere, and it would be like, oh, maybe this is a bad idea and I shouldn't do this. Also, like, I need a therapist. And that was not the case.
Yeah, it's, but that scene of once everyone's been swallowed up, and it's just them inside the creature, just it swallowing them, and you're watching them being squeezed and, like, pushed further into it, and the sound design in that scene, and just the claustrophobia of it all is so, I don't like it. I love it because it's good filmmaking, but I don't like it.
No, I don't like, nor do I love it. It is disgusting. I am not into it at all. The inside of animals, and we're watching it, and these people in these claustrophobic-like spaces. Nope. I'm good.
But and then just the whole nature of Jean Jacket, in that you think it's a UFO, and the first time you see it, you know, the first time we ever see this thing, it's just in these passing glances as it goes between clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see that it's just surrounded by a cloud that just doesn't move.
I loved that. That was clever. Whether that's been done before and he borrowed that from something else, if that's original, whatever it is, this is the first time that I'm remembering him seeing it.
It was great.
I thought that was a clever, like, way to have, like, that they had to figure this out. Like, watch this footage. What do you mm-hmm. notice? The fucking cloud is not moving. That it's there.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, that's genius.
Then, yeah, it's pretty awesome. And then just the reveal that it's not a UFO, it's not a ship, it is the alien. It's, you know, I just before I started recording, I was reading the production information on this film, and apparently, Jordan Peele was inspired by the Angels of Neon Genesis Evangelion. Because I love it. We're getting to the age. So this happened with comic books. That early comic book movies sucked for the most part, or just didn't resemble comics that they were based off of. And then we got to a point when the people who grew up reading those comics started making films. And you could tell the devotion that was there to the comic books, right, and the characters. And now we're having the generation that grew up on anime coming into filmmaking, like Jordan Peele, for example, where you're like, yes, he's clearly drawing inspiration from Neon Genesis Evangelion. He has Kiki Palmer at the end when she is escaping Jean Jacket and goes to the cowboy town down the street from them. She does a slide like in Akira.
Mm-hmm.
Which
the Toriyama slide or Akira. Not, no, wait, why did I say the Toriyama? Excuse me,
Akira, because of Akira Toriyama.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but that's not it. It's Akira the film.
Akira the film, yes, but
yeah, of no other relation,
right?
Dragon Ball creator word.
But yes, she does the slide, the famous Akira slide, and it's just it's like you can tell, like, hey, this is cool. Now that we're getting to that point that those bits of inspiration are making their way into modern film now, which is so cool because there's a lot of iconography that can be drawn on and a lot of new interesting stuff that can be brought. Even if they're not adapting things, they can just draw inspiration from.
You know, it's funny. It brings me to, like, another piece of news that we didn't talk about, and it's a little off topic, but, you know, we did get a little bit of that in when we covered Shang-Chi with Destin Daniel Cretton's kind of adaptation of that and his inspiration from, funny enough, Akira Toriyama's Dragon Ball. There was a little bit of that. And now we get a little bit of his taste for the comics again come 2025 with Avengers The Kang Dynasty.
The Kang Dynasty. And what's coming up after that is Secret Wars.
Chris. I don't know that he's directing.
No, he's not. But I like to make sure you're aware that Secret Wars is happening.
We can talk about that right after the show.
But it's, you know, what a time to be alive. Getting back to Nope, though, last couple of things. I just want to say, I thought the performances all across the board were great. I thought Jordan Peele's direction on so many scenes was fantastic. Kiki Palmer, her energy was infectious. Hoyt Van Hoytema really brought his A game with the cinematography. So many shots in this film were fantastic. This was a
beautiful film.
Yes. And just excellent, excellent use of the camera throughout. And I just, you know, I had a great time watching this movie.
I feel like I still probably like Get Out more than I like this film. This film was a bad film, but I just feel like maybe I probably need to watch it again. That's probably what it is. Like, it was good. Like I said, the music was fantastic, and that's what kept me going, just because, like, I wanted more of it. And by the end of it, we got, like, this great image of, you know, OJ on the horse. Yeah. Like, as, like, the smoke emerges, like, he's, like, victorious, like, he's there. He did this,
the hero shot.
They beat him. They beat, fucking
Jean Jacket. Way they defeated Jean Jacket was fantastic.
And the reveal of Jean Jacket was super interesting. Very beautiful, too.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, super clever. And, you know, we got this, like, amazing, you know, a nice closing piece, at least to their battle, if you will. Right. Now where that left them is another story. You know what's funny? At one point, I always felt like, is there going to be like a post-credits thing to this?
I looked it up when the credits started rolling, which, can I say, I like that the credits weren't on a black background. They started in yellow and then red and stuff. That was cool. But then I did Google. I'm like, is there a post-credits scene? Apparently there's not.
I'm glad there's not like a continuation or anything. We don't need that necessarily, but I feel like, depending on how Universal's feeling, I don't know that this is a Jordan Peele decision, but from a Universal standpoint, they may be like, well, let's explore this a little more. What is this creature? And it's like, I could see them trying to take advantage of a situation like
I that. Hope they don't do that, because this was a cool, unique movie. And I'd rather it not get exploited, because then it's like you're missing the forest for the trees. Bingo. But that is Nope.
That is Nope. You want to hear a fun fact?
Yes.
A year ago, I met Kiki Palmer.
What?
She sang.
You've never mentioned this before.
So I was working like the World Series or the ALCS, one of the two. Okay. And we were at the Houston Astros like arena, and during like the game prep, there's Kiki Palmer. I just ran into her. I was like, oh shit. And, you know, hi, bye. I ended up having to go with her because she's going to go do, like, a test for the national anthem that she's
okay,
sang.
Nice.
And I was like, that was cool.
That's pretty, like, cool.
I grew up watching your movies. That's pretty badass.
That is cool. I met Michael Rooker not too long ago at a convention.
Oh yeah, you told me that. That's awesome.
He's a nice guy, just real down to earth.
Dude, that's badass.
So, Chris, this was a good time. Nope gets a yep from me, and we got other stuff coming down the pipe. We got other shows. We got other movies. Better Call Saul is wrapping up.
Dude, I just finished season 5. I'm like 41 minutes into episode 11. I haven't finished it yet.
Oh my god!
I've been into it. Got to see our boys.
Yeah.
I was rewatching Breaking Bad too in preparation.
I've been watching clips on YouTube, just refreshing my memory on like certain like things, like Gale from season 3 of Breaking Bad. Oh, what a character!
I'm still enjoying all of the Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould universe.
Yes, exactly. I can't wait for the Huel spinoff next. But no, I thought so far I'm excited to see how Better Call Saul wraps up. Not too long after that, we got Lord of the Rings, we got House of the Dragon, we've got Andor. Just got a new trailer for Andor, and it looks incredible.
August just began, and let me tell you, the months of August and September are going to be ripe with content. It looks like we're going to get some quality content. So
are going to have a lot to say about a lot of things coming up. So stay tuned, because you're not going to want to miss it.
I will say, Zach, so you mentioned something while we were talking, and apparently we got a fucking announcement for a Secret Wars adaptation. Now,
yes,
here's my thoughts on it.
Okay.
At first, I'm like, Secret Wars, the 80s original line of comics. The
comics that was made specifically to sell toys, yes.
Sounded like a stupid fucking idea for a movie, and why the fuck would we ever want that storyline? Like, that's dumb. That makes no sense.
It's up there.
And now, because of this announcement and everything, and doing deep dives, it was brought to my attention that they have done two other entries into the Secret War storyline. Mm-hmm. One in the mid-2000s, and then one in, like, the mid-2010s. Now, if we're going by the 2010s version, I haven't looked too much in 2015, but, like, the 2015 or 16, I think, is when the issues started. The way, like, the premise of the however, I think it's, like, 6 or 7 comics that it is. Okay, I could see how it would make sense for a film that takes place across, like, multiverses, that like if they all like came together, what the fuck would happen? But like, you know, are we really gonna introduce like the Beyonders or the Beyonder or whatever the fuck?
Probably. I have no idea.
That'd be dumb. I could see like, okay, if all the multiverses smash together and we had all these fuckers, all right.
I'm putting my theory now, and I've told you this already, that I'm pretty sure the whole Phase 5-6 is going to be setting up Kang as our big bad, and in the background we're going to see Doctor Doom slowly rising in power, slowly becoming more relevant, and at the end, either at the end of Kang Dynasty or at the beginning of Secret Wars, he is going to seize power for himself and become the true final bad guy of the MCU, because that's what Doctor Doom does, and that is how it's going to go.
The final bet? You don't think there's going to be anything past a Phase 6?
Oh, God. I mean, at that point, maybe. What do you go, Galactus?
I always thought Galactus would be... I thought it was going to go Doctor Doom, then Galactus. But then we settled on Kang. And I'm like, okay, we could do Kang first, and then Doctor Doom, and then Galactus would be nice.
You know, but then again, cause...
Galactus would probably also be like a stupid-ass villain, like, in actual...
And the like, thing is,
give Galactus a solid motive, Zach. Do it right now.
He's hungry and he wants to eat a planet.
He's hungry. Yeah, great.
He's a planet eater. But listen, I think when I was watching, you know, the Infinity Saga and everything leading up to Infinity War and Endgame, I wasn't thinking about like what's gonna happen after that. I was just like, I'm really just set on where this is building up to, and.
My problem is that they still haven't laid as much foundation for the Kang stuff, and like since Loki, and there's only one episode.
Oh,
and because of that, it's like why I'm like, you know, I'm still thinking about what's after, because like you know, though I'm like excited about Kang and Jonathan Majors and all stuff, he has a new movie coming out, by the way. It's called like The Devotion or something like that. Like, he's a naval pilot. Joe Jonas is in that movie. I think Scott Eastwood is too. I could be wrong. Might not be Scott Eastwood. Anyways, looks interesting.
Yeah, I mean, anything with him, you know, he's a fantastic actor. I think once we get his return in Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, I think that's going to suddenly be like, oh shit, like, this dude's doing shit, and 100%. We need to be careful. 100%. We need to tread lightly. I guarantee you he's going to factor into Loki Season 2, and most importantly, more than any other series, Agatha, the House of Harkness, or whatever they're calling that. I don't know what they're doing with this. Who's going to care about what Agatha Harkness is doing?
I would also like to know how, like, our street heroes tie into, like...
Yeah, Daredevil and Echo are gonna fight Kang the Conqueror.
And, like, apparently now Spider-Man's, like, on the same level as Daredevil. And it's like, okay. But, like,
the man he fought Thanos.
I mean...
Whatever.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm sure there's a plan on a Pepe Silvia board somewhere. But I don't know about you, Chris. I think that's all I've got for this entry in the script or screen pantheon.
I mean, yeah, me too.
I mean, could I talk for another hour about other entertainment properties?
We could probably talk about The Jungleman for like another 10 minutes if you really like.
Do we have anything to say about The Jungleman at this juncture? He's coming. Oh,
you don't even want to know about The Jungleman.
He's coming, and he's also on his way. And, listen, I could talk about a lot of things. I could talk about how excited I am for the Netflix One Piece series. I could talk about how excited I am.
I can't, so I won't. That's Chris Kitchen here at Script or Screen.
We'll save it for another day.
You have a wonderful rest of your evening. That's Zach Strachman.
Bye.